to Women in Histology. This is Aubrey, and I'm excited to introduce this episode in our five-part series. I've always been fascinated by people who are willing to take a chance and start their own business. After all, there is risk involved. It can be difficult to know where to begin, and it's clear that the hours can be brutal. But there also seems to be countless rewards. To get the real story, we asked two NSH giants, Adif Feldman, CEO and co-founder of Anatech Limited, and Liz Chapalia, a partner and founder of Premier Laboratory, to talk about what it's like starting and owning a small business in the histology community. Liz's business, Premier Laboratory, is a GLP-compliant contract research organization, and Liz shared with us her focus on quality as a business philosophy. She believes in her team and privately expressed to me that she gives great thanks to her husband, Jim Cairns, for his encouragement and support through the years. I've been lucky enough to know Ada during my 12 years at NSH, although she and her company, Anatech, have been creating innovative products for the histopathology laboratory since 1984. Ada's commitment to education has been a driver in making her and Anatech a company internationally known for educational, professional, and research contributions in the field of histotechnology. We begin the episode with Ada sharing her story on how her business got started.
Well, I got into business because I had been working for another company, and I was in their research and development. And as often what happens in companies, there is reorganization, and they just decided that that department was no longer needed as it was structured. And there were three of us in research and development. This was, you know, developing new product lines for histology. And the three of us decided that we weren't through developing new products for histology. We felt that there was still a lot of improvements that could be made at the time. This was in the early 80s. So since we didn't have a job, we just decided let's continue to go forward and product development for the field of histology, and we started our own company, and that's how Anatech got started.
And I would have to say that's essentially what happened to me also. I had worked in clinical for most of my career and then wanted to move out to Colorado, was fortunate enough to get a job with Amgen, which is a biotechnology company, and also thinking that I'd be working for Amgen for the rest of my career, and within a year or so, I was laid off. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. It was pretty shocking for me. I'd been through multiple hospital layoffs and things like that, but to be laid off was a little bit troublesome and stressful at the time. I had a pathologist who was a boss of mine, and the two of us had made a decision of let's try to start a business. And so we thought rather than moving on that we would try to start doing some contract work. And our partnership worked reasonably well for about 5 years, and then we pretty much were not getting along, so it dissolved, and I started back up on my own in 2003. It's kind of like I started from scratch. I have a different thing. When I initially started my business, I had a bit of an advantage over Ada is that I was actually getting severance. So I had a good, I can't remember offhand, but it was either 12 to 18 months of severance. So I could spend that time building the business and not necessarily worrying about paying myself during that time. Ada, you might want to comment on what you had to do when you initially started.
It was like one day I had a beautiful job and the next morning I did not. So we went without being totally, and in terms of being prepared at all. So I did have the disadvantage of not knowing, starting from zero, but somehow it came to be. I mean, when the company, quote, it was a layoff. I mean, I did get here in the state of Michigan unemployment, but that's still not enough in terms of, putting together a company. We were extremely fortunate that at that time, Anatech's located in Battle Creek, Michigan. And at that time, the city of Battle Creek had a investment fund. They were trying to encourage new companies to come into the city. And they had a tremendous plan, and they were extremely supportive of us in terms of putting together a plan. They helped us put it together, and once we had our business plan put together, and believe it or not, we went through 7 drafts. They, the investment company here, it was called Battle Creek Investment, actually walked into the bank with us. and said, you know, we want you to give these people a loan because we're going to do some supporting. They're going to do some supporting. So we had that financial advantage. But that took months. It took literally months. I mean, I know that I was laid off in May, and all of this financial support did not come to be until August. So it can be extremely, extremely nervous. You know, you're trying to develop the product. For us, we were literally putting together a product line. You've all heard of great stories have happened in people's garages or basements. That was Anatek. We didn't have a building to go to. We were working out of, at that time, my partner's basement and such. I mean, we needed supplies to do all this product development. And before going into business, I had been at the university for 10 years. And I remember it was probably the day after we were laid off, I called the biology department and asked them if I could borrow all the histology equipment for the summer, realizing they weren't going to need it. So you when you go into business, you're going to be finding who all your friends are, and they were there for us. But it still is quite nerve-wracking because now you got a product line, and now you got to go get the clients.
And yeah, that was interesting for us, is that most of our business is word of mouth, and so I don't do a whole lot of marketing or anything, but when I started up back from scratch again, I think it was a little more difficult for me the second time around because I didn't have much of the buffer as I had before, and for, I think, a lot of the small business owners, you have to pay your employees if you have any. I had one when I first started back up again, and myself, and you have to pay your vendors, the people that give you supplies. And normally you, the business owner, is the last person to be paid. It can be a struggle, and there's a lot of time involved. I know I've been working, well, I did work 7 days a week, probably 10 hours, sometimes more, a day from 1998 to 2013, and had made the decision in 2013 that I just needed to cut back. But it is a lot of time and energy that goes into starting a small business, and it's not something that happens right away, and it takes years before you have a revenue stream that's consistent and reliable, and that you can then think about growing. Well, you're always thinking about growing the business, but actually making some considerable investments financially back into the business.
In the early 80s, when Anatek started, the word of mouth was it took you 3 years before you would really be making money when you start a company. And once you got to 3 years, because I remember I was talking with my dentist at the time, and he had started his practice at the same time that Anatek was born. And so we both were like, okay, realizing, you know, this cash flow is, I mean, cash flow meaning you want your positive cash flow, which means you're bringing more money in than what's going out for all your expenses, you know, payment, vendors, and everything else. Well, so I'd be talking with him, and I says, yeah, they say, you know, the first 2-3 years are the critical years, and, you know, and after that. He goes, yeah, that's what they said. And he says, and then when I got to 3 years, they told me it was 5 years. And I think that's really it. When you go into business, it will be 3 to 5 years before you are totally comfortable that you'll take a look and you'll go, yeah, the checkbook is good. Okay. You can afford slow months, bad months, because you've got the cash there that you've grown over the years. So, but one of the very best decisions anybody, I think, the best decisions that we made here at Anatek, you've got to realize you cannot know it all. And once you first get started, one of the first things that we did was the wisest, is that we made sure we had a good accountant and we had a good lawyer. Because you have to, you know, be established. You just, you know, whether you're going to be incorporated, limited, you want to be legally established as a company, and you need an accountant, because those are the guys or women who definitely know the rules in terms of how to pay the taxes and such. And Liz and I, we know the science of our field. To get established, you want to make sure that you've got the professionals there who can help you get set up correctly.
It's really important to surround yourself with individuals in that aspect. You pay for what you get for, so you want to surround yourself with people that you don't have the expertise in to make some decisions and to help you get through things. that they have the expertise, and you pay for good expertise. So it's important to understand that sometimes you're going to have to pay the high dollar for your accountants and your legal advice. For me, I pay some regulatory people to help me through equipment validation and things like that. But it's not just surrounding yourself with good people who supplement what you're good at. You also need to surround yourself with really, really good people and the people that you employ. And I try to surround myself with a bunch of people who I think are really, really smart and bright and are better at things than I am, because I'm good at certain things, but I'm not good at everything. And I think we all need to realize that we have strengths and weaknesses. And I try to hire people that are smarter and better than me. And I think it's really important to do that in a small business, because I think it's going to add to success in that small business. And Ada, you do the same thing,
correct? I do the same thing. I was once told when all the years at the university that, you know, one of the professors, the PhD, it was like the very first week or so I was working with him, and I thought that was so strange of him, you know, because, you know, I've got, you know, a master's degree and here's this PhD. And he says, you know, it doesn't bother me. He says, I surround myself by people who are smarter than me. And I thought, gosh, Gene, what are you talking about? But then I realized that in terms of Anatech, I mean, when I'm hiring somebody, I want to see that they've got a characteristic that I don't have, that they're smarter in this or that, whether it's they just love doing this detailed paperwork, definitely someone who's got fantastic graphic capabilities, things like that. Your company is only as good as the people who are part of it. Definitely got to pay attention to these good employees. Let them know when my manufacturing people leave at the end of the day. One of my comments to them is I say thank you. And one time when there was a new person on board, one of the older ones says, oh, yeah, you got to be prepared when you leave at the end of the day. Ada's going to say thank you to you. She goes, why is she thanking me? And then one guy says, what are you thanking me for? And I says, thank you for putting in a good day. Don't want them at all ever to think I'm taking them for granted.
That's funny. I do the exact same thing. I'm like, thanks. They're like, Liz, we'll see you tomorrow. I'm like, thanks.
Yeah.
Because you know, I might roll in maybe sometimes a little bit later than everybody, but I always stay later.
That's right.
And I think the other thing that's what's really important is you want to create an environment that's a positive environment. And this is how I feel personally. We work so much out of our life, 40 hours a week plus, and we want that time at work to be positive and rewarding. So, and we want our employees to understand that we value them. Some of the things that I think are important, if a client compliments one of our projects or likes the work that we've done, that goes right to the technician who's been responsible for that. I would never take credit for something that somebody else did. I'm always going to give credit where credit's deserved.
And I let the client know that at the same time. When someone says, you know, that was really good, and I will say, well, the person responsible for that was. And something else that you want to do while you're paying all the attention to your employees, don't forget to evaluate yourself. But oftentimes you want to be sitting there and you want to, you know, evaluate yourself as much as your employees, because you want to know what are you doing, what's working well. Often at times I will sit there with, especially, you know, our people in manufacturing who have all this detailed paperwork that they want to do, and over again we'll tell them, tell us when something's not working well. We've got a rule around here that if they find themselves making a mistake, number one, you never cover it up and let us know. We need to know what was not clear enough. I mean, I know there are times, jobs and whatever, that people are just scared stiff when they've made a mistake and whatever. If you make a mistake, stop. Get it corrected. And then we're going to sit down and figure out what was wrong in the directions that this came to be. You know, nobody wants to be coming to work and just dreading every moment. That type of environment just is asking for problems.
It creates more mistakes. I've been in that environment, and I told myself as a boss, I would never put my employees in that environment, because when you get stressed and you get nervous, you are likely to make mistakes. So you want to create an environment where it's okay. You don't want mistakes to happen, but it's you want people to communicate that to you. And I do the same thing that Ada does. It's like if something goes wrong, I want to know. Let's sit down, let's figure out what happened, and let's figure out a plan of action that we make sure that this doesn't happen again. And it's never punitive. It's always about an opportunity for improvement. And that's what one of the questions that they had posted us with is, think of your worst mistake that you've made. And I think both Ada and I agree that we think of mistakes as opportunities for improvement. And we take every mistake as a learning experience and move on from there and to make sure that that mistake doesn't happen in place. Because I firmly believe that most people who work for somebody who are employed want to do a good job. And they can't. If a mistake happens, it's because we haven't trained them properly, or they don't have the appropriate tools in place,
exactly,
or the documentation in place to get the job done properly.
You know, some people, you know, I give these workshops in terms of troubleshooting that I show all these things that have gone wrong. Well, people call up, you know, asking to troubleshoot, and they'll say, oh, you got the answer and all that, and I tell them, she says, you know, I've been in the field a lot longer. The reason why I know what has gone wrong, because there's a good possibility that I already did that myself. So I know what goes wrong. What got me into this, you know, having a profession, having this business, was being laid off, you know, a cloud. Clouds do have silver linings. You learn from your mistakes. I mean, all these lines that we hear are really necessarily the truth. It's not fun when you're in the middle of a mistake. I'll admit that. But you can turn them around.
Being in a service organization, if you do make a mistake and it's related to a sample set that you receive from a client, you need to be honest with the client, and you can't hide the mistake that you made, because when you're working in an environment, and I think it's even with Ada and she's providing solutions, it's still providing a product. I provide a service. You build relationships with your clients, and your businesses are normally going to have, or my business has, a certain set of core values, and we operate on quality. And quality is key for us, and the other thing is customer service, and we want to be a communicative partner. So we want to see that our clients succeed, and we want to help them succeed. And we're not going to allow them to succeed if we make a mistake and we don't tell them of that mistake. So it's really important that you be honest with your clients, and I think that adds a lot. They'll trust you more if you're honest with them rather than covering something up. For us in quality, and for me, I'm also under regulatory considerations and FDA guidance. You have to be into the realization that what you do and how you do it and the documents that you have in place and the procedures that you have in place are living. And if I look at the SOPs and the procedures I had in place when I first started, they're very minimal. And I have a lot now. So your business is going to grow. So don't think that you have to do everything right away. You're going to grow into it, and the way you handle things and how you approach things and the procedures that govern that and your policies that govern that are also going to grow with it. And you have the philosophy that you're always willing to learn something new. And like what Ada said, you don't know everything. I don't know everything. If I want to learn something new every day in your career.
You do, and yeah. That's what keeps, I mean, it is stimulating. We are, no matter what the field is, whether it's like what we are in the sciences or selling fabrics or clothes or whatever, everything keeps changing. You know, the clients, the customers, they keep changing. Not any of us are doing anything the same way we did it 5-10 years ago. So since the customer is changing, you as a business have to be prepared to change. You can't say, as we sometimes heard in the labs, I've always done it that way. None of us are doing anything the same way we did it 5 years ago, definitely not 10 years ago. So if you have a company, you've got to be alert and seeing how the field is changing, because you too have to change along with it, all right? Whether it's the product line that you're going to be offering, definitely the way you sell it, all right? I mean, now, you know, you sell by having a website, you know, and you put the chemicals in a basket. I mean, who would ever have assumed that, you know, when we first started Anatech, 90% of all the orders came in with the telephone ringing, right? And then it slowly went over to the fax machine. Well, now they're coming in online. And that all means changes in terms of how you're running a company. You've got, and that's always when any company that you've got. So one of the decisions you have to be aware of the world around you is changing, and therefore you, the way you're running your company, have to be prepared to change as well.
You have to be able to react to for our clients' needs. And that's why I like the size that we are, and we're a smaller lab, because I can be more proactive and it's easier for me to change things and to do things specifically related to a client's project, where sometimes larger organizations sometimes struggle with change. They have things so set in stone. And where here, I can, if an employee is unhappy with how something's worded in an SOP or a policy, we can change it, and it's easy for us to change it, and we do change it. We're very reactive, and we try to improve on what we do on a day-to-day basis, so nothing is set in stone. Everything is kind of living, and all our documents are kind of living documents, and if we need to change something, we change it, because bottom line, we want to provide a better product to our clients, and we want to grow and meet our clients' needs.
And that is what Liz just says, one of the great advantages of being a small company rather than working for a large one. It's kind of like we're in a speedboat. We're in a boat, and we can make a turn real fast. Bigger companies are giant cruise ships. But when you own your own company,
advantage.
It's all on your shoulders, too. So
yes,
you are, as Liz indicated
part.
Earlier, you will be putting in very, very long hours, very long hours. I just remember one time going home and working on the computer, and it was 10 o'clock at night, and I just put my head down to rest, and then I ended up falling asleep and went, no, you weren't supposed to fall asleep yet. But that's what you do. But it is stimulating. It is a lot of fun.
I find it extremely rewarding because
yes.
It's something new and something good happens every day. And it's very, very, like we talked about earlier about mistakes and thinking of mistakes as an opportunity for improvement. Making sure that, for me, I think it's really important that you have core values and how you do things on a day-to-day basis. And my big thing is quality. And if I'm going to provide a quality product, I need to make sure that I order quality supplies. So I don't scrimp on anything. And I feel my business is not as inexpensive as some, but it's not as expensive as some, but I feel that I provide quality for what a client is paying. And so if the employees need something to do their job better, I'm going to get it for them. And I'm not going to scrimp. And that's probably why I've been using Ada's reagents, since the 80s.
Yep, right.
And I have not changed. I have not changed, and I will not change, because I know and I understand their philosophy and how they manage and make their reagents, and it's very, very important for me in a service environment that provides digital pathology and whole slide imaging, that consistency and quality of the reagents that I use are really, really important, and the quality of the product that not core products, but supplies are of high quality. And the equipment that you use is of high quality. I don't scrimp that. And that's my philosophy. I've never scrimped over equipment and supplies.
And that's a hard pill for, as an owner, for you to hear sometimes, because you're going to hear from the customer, you're too expensive. I can get this from somebody else at a lower price. And in those first years when you're struggling, that's a hard thing to hear when you're talking to a customer, because you're watching every dollar come in and to realize, gosh, I'm not getting that. How can I make the product cheaper? Or how can I do it for less? But don't compromise, because when you go less, as Liz says, you have to decide and hold true to yourself in terms of the quality of the product that you want. And you've got to realize those first years are going to be bumpy, but hold to what you are believing in. Eventually, at times, a lot of those people end up returning to you because they don't like the quality of the product that they're getting. Sometimes they don't. That sometimes is something that's hurtful at the very beginning, because you are so much watching that bottom line. Okay?
You want to generate that revenue. I've come into situations like that where I want your quality, but I want their pricing. Boy, I really want to take that business away from that competitor. You know, I want to take that business, but am I going to discount my pricing so much to make it not profitable for us? So I think those are some of the mistakes that younger businesses make, is discounting, not giving yourself enough value for what you provide as a product, and sticking with and believing in what you charge for your services or your product. That I struggled with a little bit. because I always was worried, oh, that's going to be too much. They're not going to want that. And when I was quoting things. But I realized that I'm going to quote what it costs, and if they're uncomfortable with the quote, we can maybe potentially discuss it. But bottom line, I don't want to undersell my services, because I firmly believe that I provide a high-quality product with a high level of customer service. I think it's a very, very good product. But the other thing that I think is really, really good is you don't want to say negative things about your competitors. I think it's really, really important not to do that. I think that makes you look small. Say, that, well, they don't do a good job. Don't want
and
to say that.
Especially in our field, and I think every histotech can see it, you realize how people are fluid. They move from one position, from one lab to another, to one company, to another company. And if you have developed an enemy in one company and then they go move to another company, that trail is going all the way. I mean, when in the early years when I'd be talking with a customer and they would say, well, you know, I tried your product, but I like so-and-so's better. My response was, they too also have an excellent product. Don't say, well, you're not going to end up liking it because it's not going to last on you and whatever. Let them go forward. They'll think they'll be respecting you much more.
Because I think it goes to building relationships, and it's more than just providing a service. For me, it's building that relationship with that client, and that client knowing that I have their best interest in mind. Because I get asked to do, for me as a service business, we get asked to do quotes that are quite extensive and can be very, very expensive. And the first thing I do is I step back and I'm saying, well, do they really need all that stuff done? And I will go to them. I'm like, I'm going to quote it out, but let's just start with this, because I don't think you should be spending all of this until we know that this works. I think that that adds more value for me as a business owner. I might be decreasing my revenue, but in the long run, I'm creating a relationship with a client where they know and they trust me, and they know that I'm going to do what is best for them.
The customers are going to come to you. They're going to be frantic. I need this. I need this. I need this. Give them, you know, give them the support. Help them. You can have their trust also, and they'll be coming back to you because they are going to trust you because they know you're going to help them. And sometimes the help is not your product line, all right?
And then sometimes the support is like, if I can't do something or I'm unable to perform a certain task, I will say that I'm unable to perform it, and then I will give them advice on who I think that they need to contact. I think one of the things that I struggled with, and when you're an early business, I think it's really, really important because you want to bring that revenue in. You want to bring that revenue in that you don't do things that you're not capable of doing or not capable of doing at a high level of quality. Because what happens if you bring a project in or you bring something in and you don't do it well because you wanted to bring that revenue in, that bad result is going to travel so much faster than a good result. That client's not going to be happy with you, and therefore they're not going to recommend you to somebody else, and they're not going to come back to you. So what I do is I'm very honest with my potential clients. Yes, we've done that before. No, we have not done that before, but I know it's within our capabilities. And if you'd like me to, why don't you send me some samples, and I'll pilot those for you free of cost, and so you can get confidence in us that we're going to be able to handle your samples properly. Or three, sorry, I'm unable to do this. This is not the type of work that we do, but here's the person that I can refer you to. And I think if you keep that in mind as you start out, I think you'll be far more successful than if you take projects that you're not going to do a very, very good job at.
You know, this is just another way of saying when you have a business, be prepared. You're going to, it is very wise to plant a lot of seeds. Plant the seeds now, they will bloom later. As we've kind of stressed more than once, those first years when all you want is those dollars coming in, you don't see the wisdom of planting seeds. It's wise. Plant seeds. Be patient. They do end up blooming.
And another example I can use is this. I take any size study. So if it's one block, I'll process it, and I don't add an upcharge to that, like you have to spend a minimum, I charge what it costs. And I remember sending out bills that were $50 or $150. Well, I had a client that I started working with, I think, in 2005 or 2006. that their first study was, I think, five blocks that they sent to me. In 2009 and 2010, they were 75% of my revenue. Not that that's great to have a client, that one client that's 75% of the revenue, but they had gone from $100 to hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
And because I was going to process it, and I did a good, and we did a good job, and we did a quality job, and that they're still our client, and we still get so. It's building those relationships, which is really, really important, and never thinking that if you can't do something, it's okay, because a lot of times when I email somebody, I'm saying, you know, I might be the best fit for that. I think if you want a one-stop shop, you're going to have to go to this person. They're a good lab. But if you want to separate the samples out, you know, we can do this part of it, but we can't do that part of it. We ended up getting the work anyway, because I was so appreciative that you were honest with me on the phone. I'm like, well, I would, you know, of course I'm going to try to be honest with you.
Lady, this is Aubrey. I was wondering if you both could speak a little bit to the fact that you're obviously successful business owners. You've talked about the long hours that are involved. But in the, you know, decade I've known both of you, you also are involved speaking at events. You're involved in associations. Can you talk as to why you spend time doing that on top of owning and running a business, or what advantages that's been to you? Do you prioritize participating in those kinds of things, associations and speaking and other avenues?
Before entering, you know, the world of business, I taught for 10 years at the University of Michigan. That is something I really, truly love to do. And as far as I'm concerned, sharing my knowledge is fantastic. And now when I share my knowledge, whether, you know, at first it could have been just, you know, basic chemistry, stuff you get out of the chemistry textbook. But as I've learned more in the world of business in terms of the manufacturing of these chemicals or the government regulations, you know, OSHA or FDA and all that, I feel I want to still continue to share this knowledge, because it's still information that the techs all need to know. You know, sharing the knowledge, and the easiest way to share the knowledge is with the societies. They've gone and they've worked to put on these programs. So it's, you know, yes, I could do like what some other companies are doing and just literally, you know, do the work ourselves and do webinars or saying, oh, we're going to be at, you know, this hotel and, you know, come and do all that. It's a field I love. Found out I loved it when I was in college. I just see it as a continuation of sharing. And as I'm growing with my knowledge, and the knowledge I'm growing with is unique. It's the manufacturing world. The techs don't know that. They're not learning this. I mean, they're learning, you know, about the biopsies, procedures, and information within the hospital and lab. But this is my way of helping them to continue to grow as well. Because some of the knowledge I have, they need to know it too for them to be wise consumers. And I just feel the societies make it much easier. I mean, they've been extremely kind. They invite me or they accept my, you know, abstracts. So that's the reason why I do it. It's just a continuation of sharing and growing in the field.
I feel pretty much the same way. I love teaching and I love to educate. And I think people may perceive sometimes as a service business that might not be the best thing, because I'm giving other potential competitors, you know, how to do things well and how to do things right. So I'm giving away some of my expertise, but I don't mind giving away my expertise. So I think ultimately it's serving the histology community and it's serving the general patient population. I want to see people do good work and I want to see people do good histology. But I was thinking about this before we had this conference call or this call, is that I was saying what really molded me and what made me be the manager or the business owner I am today. And part of it, and a huge part of it, was volunteering. Because volunteering gave me the opportunity, one, to come in contact with other individuals in my profession who are very, very good at what they do, and that I consider experts, and that I value their opinion and I admire. So it brought me into contact with multiple people like that. The second thing is that I learned so much from volunteering. Some of the things that I did with volunteering, like volunteering to be a grader for the Board of Registry, I think I learned more from being a grader than the amount of time that I spent. So a lot of times, for me, I see volunteering as an opportunity for me to learn, and I've learned a lot. through volunteering, and it's really helped me grow as a technologist. And I've learned, and I'm still learning, the grading, and then being in groups of organizations or being on boards and being asked to serve on boards. You're sitting on these boards, and you're involved with other high-stake people and very, very knowledgeable people in the industry, and you learn so much from them. So I perceive it more as a giving back because I want to educate, but also a very strong learning opportunity for me. And I've been very honored to sit on certain boards and to be asked to do certain things because I feel that not only can I contribute, but I also learn as I'm contributing, and to me that's really, really important.
It's another avenue to surround ourselves by smarter people.
Yeah.
It really is. There's all these people out there, as Liz said. They're the tops of their field, and so it's just it's an excellent opportunity to expand our relationships.
And I want to point one thing out is I don't think either Aida and I both, even though we both own small businesses, when we educate and we never promote. So we never promote our business when we educate, or I never promote my business if I'm serving on a board. My job to serve on a board or to be on the committee is supporting that organization and that organization only.
Yeah, when I'm one of the committees that I'm on, we go around the table and like, where are you from, right? And it depends upon what probably the 10 or 20 people before me say. I mean, most of them will say, well, you know, I'm Aida Feldman, I'm a histotech, I'm on the committee. Oh, I'm Aida Feldman, I'm histotech, you know, if everybody's just been saying their hometown, you know, if they've been all saying, well, I work at St. Joseph, I'll just say, well, I'm Aida Feldman, I work at Anatech Limited, all right? But I never say I'm the owner, I'm the CEO of that. No, I'm part of Anatech. Yes, I may have some more heavy responsibilities here, but I'm part of the team. And I just don't put up that flag, as some people say you should. Well, forget it. That's not my flagpole. If I want to put it up, I will. The involvement is there because I get a great deal of enjoyment of sharing my knowledge. Because like Liz, I really, really, truly love to teach. Really, truly do it. I love seeing that little light bulb come on. I mean, people are sitting in our workshops, no matter if it's the 90-minute, 3 hours. You see, you look out in the audience, and you know somebody's going back to their lab, and you've just answered a question for them. That's great. That's great payment.
And the other thing that I've had the opportunity, because owning my own business, is I have the ability to bring high school students, college students, and grade school students into the lab. And we do that every year. So we host high school juniors and seniors once a year. We've had fourth graders in the lab. And they actually get to sit down and do histology. And it's not like I'm going to convert everyone in the group to be a histotech, but if I can get somebody interested in science and in science in general, even one kid, if I can spark their interest in science, I feel good. And it's very exciting to see some of these young minds and young kids get excited about the work that you do. And that's what's really fun. And owning a small business has allowed me that opportunity. It's also allowed me to do things that I research things that I feel interested in and value, and because I have the opportunity to do it here, where I wouldn't necessarily have the opportunity in a hospital situation or a pharmaceutical situation because it's not my money.
They may not be bringing in enough money.
It's their money.
It's all done.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is another truly advantage of being a small business. You can decide what corner you're going to turn at. You want to develop a product on this, so be it. You can do it. You don't have corporate there saying, well, what do you think the sales dollars of this going to be? Because they look at it all and they can say, well, you're going to need this and this. Okay, so it's going to cost $30,000 to do it. How much is the market out there? Well, there's not enough market to support this. So, no, you're not going to do it. Small business, you want to do it, so be it.
Yep.
You go ahead and do it. And if all you do is sell, you know, 100 of those in a year and not 10,000, that's okay because you're a small business. You'll make the money that you need to make on that. You'll make the profit, And that's okay. So you've got, there's that control that you've got, because in the big companies, it's not going to be.
For me, it's learning about how, for me, I'm excited about digital. And I've been utilizing digital for, since 2000 and I think 8. And I can spend the time and I can spend the resources to study different things and to study, stability of reagents. In fact, Aiden and I have worked a little bit on hematoxylin and eosin stability and learned a tremendous amount about staining consistency and reproducibility because I had the time and I had the willingness to work on it. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I didn't own my own lab. So I can gear what kind of research and kind of things I want to look at, which is really, really exciting to me. And then I can present that information in posters or as a portion of a workshop that I give. To me, that is an added bonus for owning your own business. You can kind of, like Ada said, do what you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, for the last 2-3 months, you know, I'll just get out of this corner office and I'll go in the lab because for the last 2-3 months we've been playing around. We've been doing additional research with hematoxylin. And I know, you know, I was going to say, okay, yep, we've got this done. Yep, okay, well, wow, did anybody ever realize? Now, true, it may be a little chemical point piece of knowledge there, but I've got it now. I now, in terms of stability of hematoxylins and such like that, it will pay off. I mean, someday I'm going to be doing a consulting thing and something's going to go up and I go, well, I got this piece of knowledge now that nobody else does in terms of stability and stuff like that. It's our control. It's your control being a small business. And you can keep having the stimulation and excitement of your life because you've got the control. I mean, I'm of an age that I guess I'm supposed to have already been retired, and someone says, why do you do what you do? Because it's exciting. And then until it no longer comes exciting, you know, so this is cool. I'm having fun. Why stop? That's what you want when you own your own business. I'm sure everybody has had a job that when they get up in the morning, they dread it. I had a job that was 8 to 5, and I remember one day, looking at the clock, and I looked at the clock, and it was 8:15, and my thought was, oh, my God, it's been only 15 minutes? I had hated it. I hated the job. When you're staring at the clock and you're realizing, oh, my God, it's only 15 minutes, and I still have to put in a full day, that's not the life you want. You know, the day's gone by, and, you know, the guys are coming to say goodnight, and I go, what? It's 5 o'clock already?
But beware, you are going to have some bad days.
Oh,
and you're going to have days where you question, why did I go into business? Why am I still doing this? Why, you know. But that passes. And for me, it usually passes in an hour or so. It doesn't stay with me.
I've had several bad days in a row, okay? But you go forward, okay? You go forward.
When it all works well, it's great. It's just fun. And I look forward to coming to work. That's a good place to be in when you look forward to coming in to work and you think, even I thought if I ever retired, which my husband thinks I'll never retire, but I think that I would still be educating. And I would still be running around teaching if I could. People would ask me if I ever was going to own a business. I would have said no.
Well, I did tell people I never wanted to own my own business.
But now I do, and I find it very, very rewarding. I find it can be stressful. It can be tense at times, but it also is very, very rewarding when a client loves what the work that you've done and that they've appreciated what you've done and when you've worked on something new and it works. I mean, that's great, and it's really fun when that happens.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Women in Histology, brought to you by the National Society for Histotechnology. Check out all of our podcasts by visiting the blog or find us on iTunes. Search word HistoTalks.